from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest is Darius Butler, 9-year NFL veteran, former New England Patriot, and Ellen, fellow podcaster.
He's just like us.
Yes, he is. Celebrities, they're just like us. Also, a really interesting part of Darius's career is that he has played with the most fashionable quarterback in the NFL and the least fashionable quarterback in NFL history.
He has, and he has a lot to say about it. This week, obviously, a lot happened. Cam Newton was diagnosed with COVID-19, so thoughts and prayers to Cam, but also thoughts and prayers to his drip and what we missed this week with just no outfit to report about.
I know that devastated you. And just for those who are out there, you know, drip is basically fashion sense, style, swagger. Just, you know, just letting the people know. Look, I think that obviously they missed Cam Newton's fashion, but I think they missed him a little bit more on the field, Ellen. You had to watch Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer basically throw up all over themselves in that loss to Kansas City. We'll break that down with Darius Butler. And once and for all, Darius Butler solves the Tom Brady-Bill Belichick debate. Who deserves more credit for the Patriots dynasty? Darius lets you know that and more next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now as promised, we're joined by former NFL player, former New England Patriot, and one of the best analysts out there right now, Darius Butler. Darius, thanks for joining us on the Take 5 Podcast.
What's up, Chris, man? Thanks for having me. Long time no see, man.
Yeah, long time no see. Darius and I go back a little bit. I was a Patriots beat writer when he came in the league in 2009 out of UConn playing for the Patriots, so I appreciate him making some time for us here. So I want to ask you, obviously, about last night's Patriots game. Patriots lose this one 26-10. A lot to unpack there, but we'll start on the defensive side of the ball. Only three times in Patrick Mahomes' career with the Kansas City Chiefs has he been held without a touchdown in the first half. All three times, it's been Bill Belichick and that Patriots defense who have done it. What did they do to flummox the MVP last night?
Man, it's just Bill being Bill, man. He just showed, even though they lost the game, obviously there's no moral victories, but he just showed once again why he's the greatest coach of all time, and especially defensively. Just having a plan and having the personnel as well. You know, having the personnel back there, even with nine guys opting out, a bunch of them on defense, like, and you still come into a game where you have this offense who just can't be stopped. You know, you got weapons galore. You find a way to not even give up a touchdown, I think, in the first half. Hats off to him again. They executed well. I just think they missed out a couple opportunities to turn Patrick Mahomes over. And, that's really the only way you can beat this team, because once they get hot, get going, it's hard to stop.
Yeah, no doubt about it. At one point on the broadcast, I think Tony Romo was saying a lot that, the Patriots were – just rushing three, dropping eight, but they were doing something kind of with the defensive end / outside linebacker guys like Simon and Chase Winovich. Can you maybe explain that a little bit, what they were doing there, maybe just to sort of get in Mahomes' field of vision?
Yeah, so it was a lot of tight matches. That's a Bill Belichick special. He used to do it all the time, especially when we play guys like Peyton Manning or somebody who just gets a lot of people involved. Throwing off timing, making the quarterback throw in the tight windows all game. And then, like you said, only rushing three, you're just putting more guys in the passing lanes. You know, maybe it's in the flat, maybe it's in the middle. And one thing about Patrick Mahomes, and I think they did a good job of it last night, you want to kind of keep him boxed in as much as possible. He's a quarterback that, he can kill you from the pocket. He can make all the throws. But when he starts extending plays and guys, receivers start to make those second moves and second cuts, Hartman and Hill and Kelsey, they start to, kind of that second play, that's when they can really, really kill you for the big play. They did a good job for most of the night preventing that. But that was definitely a good mix-up, is dropping those two ends, just getting them kind of in the windows, and also being there if he was to scramble and get out the pocket.
Yeah, Bill always has something in his bag, as you know. Yeah. But as you mentioned, he also has a lot of talent, too. On your Everything DB YouTube channel, where you really do a great job of just breaking down coverages, and I've learned a lot from it. I know It's funny, I always tell this story. Rodney Harrison, when he played for the Patriots, used to always say to us as media members, he would always say, no disrespect, but you guys don't know anything about football. And he didn't use the word anything. He used a four-letter word that starts with S. Yeah, but it's, know. You know, that's hot, Rod. But you really helped break it down for the layman. But I saw on your Everything DB YouTube channel, which everybody should check out, that you ranked before the season the top secondaries in the league. And you had the Patriots number one. So how much does it help Bill to have that talent in the secondary? And why do you think the Patriots have the best secondary in the NFL?
Well, it starts with having the best secondary coach in the NFL, and that's Bill Belichick. Even though he's not in there, you know, day in, day out doing it, but, you know, his fingerprint is always all over it. So that's where it starts, because talent is one thing, but it's a whole other thing, you know, trotting guys out there every week and them being the more prepared team. And that's what you get with the New England Patriots secondary, having a guy like Devin McCourty, who's been back there for a decade now, you know, making sure guys are lined up, making sure the game plan is on point, being executed properly, you know, bringing Jason McCourty over, Gilmore, who's all world talented, but mentally he thinks, you know, steps ahead of the game as well. And JC Jackson, another kind of underrated, under the radar superstar, in my opinion. And Jay Jones, everybody comes in and just kind of does their job. Obviously, Patrick Chung, he's been a lockdown back there, but he opted out this year. But, you know, the guys that come in and they're held accountable. You know, everybody's going to do their job. Everybody's going to be lined up. Everybody's going to execute. And if you look around the league, that's the biggest difference between good teams and bad teams. Guys really knowing their job, being lined up, knowing, and then on the defensive side of it, it's knowing your job, and now you can actually look across the ball and say, okay, now I can expect this. Because when you're going against an offense like Eric Bien and Andy Reid, you can't be thinking about what you're doing or is my guy next to me knowing what he's doing? We got to already be past that. We got to, okay, I'm getting this split. How are we handling this situation? What are we doing in the red zone? What are we doing on third down? So that's where they are. They're kind of levels ahead of most other teams.
Yeah, I know Bill always says more games in the NFL are lost than won. And I see it, you know, when you break it down, you always talk about being connected and having communication. It seems like that's something the Patriots always really stress.
Especially in the secondary. So the secondary and the offensive line.
So I want to flip it to the other side of the ball. Defense, no doubt, did their job against the Chiefs. They held them really to 19 points. You know, the 26, there was a pick six in there by Jarrett Stidham, which wasn't his fault. But you look at the other side of the ball, a guy you came into the league with, Brian Hoyer, got the start. Yep. And he really wasn't able to perform. You saw the play at the end of the half where he sort of lost track of time, got sacked by Frank Clark. He had another play in the red zone where he was strip sacked by Taco Charlton. And you look at Patriots quarterbacks on the night, they were 20 of 37, 172, one touchdown. That was Stidham, and four turnovers. When you look at what they got from Hoyer and Stidham versus what they got from Cam Newton, what do you think hurt them the most, and what do you think drove Bill Belichick crazy the most about that quarterback play?
Not having those two empty red zone trips definitely drove him crazy the most. I knew Hoyer was going to be pulled after that second one, but the first one's inexcusable. Not knowing the timeout situation. And even if you had a timeout, I mean, that was the situation. I'm watching the play. I was actually working out my buzz. I'm watching. I'm like, all right, I got to go either to the end zone or just throw it away. Like, those are the only two options here. I never played quarterback, but I know that. Hoyer's been in the league for a ton of years. Like you said, we got drafted together. He's got to know that. He's got to know better than that. Getting reps or not, I don't care if you get thrown in there like, you know, Justin Herbert did 5 minutes before the game. Like, you got to know those things situationally. So that was bad.
Yeah, I mean, I just, had a mental error there, and just, you know, we had a chance to throw the end zone and everyone was off and covered and just got thrown away.
And obviously it's going to be a huge drop off going from, your starter, especially when it's Cam Newton and the different dynamic that he brings to an offense. So I think they had a good plan going into it. They were moving the ball up and down the field. But once you get in the red area, you know, that's the difference, especially when it comes to beating a team like the Chiefs. It's getting in the red area and scoring, coming away with touchdowns, and especially not coming away empty-handed. In the NFL, you want to end drives with kicks as much as possible. And, some of that, like that drop in some of it, I feel like it can kind of be attributed to that same-day travel, because that was I don't understand how the NFL let that happen. But, you know, it was sloppy all around.
Yeah, I want to hit on that. Obviously, Patriots lose the game 26-10 at Arrowhead on Monday night. But a lot of people didn't think the game would even be played. Game was originally supposed mm-hmm. to be on Sunday at 4:05. And this was kind of the big story in the NFL. Cam Newton tests positive for COVID, and he's not able to go. And people are worried that mm-hmm. maybe there's an outbreak like in Tennessee. So Patriots end up having to fly in the same day. They leave basically around 9 a.m., you know, get to KC, spend a couple of hours in the hotel, have to go to the stadium. You played 9 years in the NFL. Did you ever have any experience where you had to go in day of and putting yourself in the shoes of some guys that you played with, like Devin McCourty, Matt Slater? Would you have wanted to board that plane knowing what the situation was?
You know what? I couldn't even put my mindset, where theirs is, even going into the season, you know, deciding to play. I never had to deal with anything like this with something like COVID going on. So I'm sure going into the season, they already had, you know, in their mind, like, hey, you know, it's a certain set of circumstances that we're going to have to deal with at some point. And so that's going to be on the back of your mind. But I've never dealt with the same day travel. I haven't had to do that since high school, honestly. It's kind of unimaginable, honestly, because guys go through so much mentally, physically, emotionally to get ready for a game. Kind of from that Friday into practice to Sunday kickoff. And, you know, so for guys to have their different routines and things like that, Cam actually does a great job of kind of documenting it with his iconic saga. Like, and that everybody has their own routine. So to just throw that off and go into Arrowhead and play against Super Bowl champs, you know, the chips were stacked against them. But I feel like they came out, they gave themselves a chance to win.
Yeah, what have you seen, you know, from Cam this year when he has played, and how is the offense the Patriots are running different from when Tom was directing it?
Oh, well, obviously the skill set, you know, completely different, but Cam's been throwing the ball well as well. You know, he's been getting guys involved, making accurate throws, great throws downfield. It's crazy to see that Julian Edelman hit his career high with Cam after playing all those years with Tom, because that's kind of been the knock on Cam. But I think you're just seeing kind of Cam 2.0. You're seeing him not taking as many hits, being a better passer. You know, kind of I played with Andrew Luck, and Andrew Luck was a guy who, you know, took a lot of hits, a lot of self-inflicted damage. And Cam's the same way. You know, when you're built like that, that's part of the game. So him taking more care of his body, that's a big part of it. But it's no other quarter. I played against a lot of quarterbacks. It's something different being on the field across from a guy and seeing the stature of that guy. You know, okay, at some point we may be in the open field together. At some point I got to make a decision. So that's a different ball game with Cam's out there. He's kind of like a LeBron almost out there on the football field. You know, he has a swagger that kind of, you know, permeates throughout the team. So I'm loving what I'm seeing from him.
Yeah. So I want to say, I think another, DB from South Florida, maybe the OG of DBs from South Florida, uh-huh. Deion Sanders, used to say, when you had a guy like Cam coming, sometimes you got to make a business decision.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Deion said his shoulders weren't built for that. His shoulders were made for custom suits. it's different out there with Cam, man. But he's been playing his butt off, man. I'm proud of him. You know, a lot of guys wrote him off. And he's just one of those guys who's the ultimate competitor. So he's going to go out there and put it all on the line, you know, injured or not. That's what he did in Carolina. And you know how this business is. Sometimes it's ugly business. But I'm glad he's getting another opportunity. I mean, honestly, after that last game, he should be renegotiating right now. he should be renegotiating to be the highest paid quarterback in the league right now, man. But he's been working his tail off, man. You see Bill been raving about him. His teammates been raving about him. So I'm excited for those guys.
You might have already hit on this, but I just want to go back to it because, you know, you're a guy, 15 career interceptions, and you know, throughout the course of your career, took 4 back for a touchdown. You were a guy who had great instincts when you played. So defensively, when you prepared to play Cam, what was the book on Cam Newton as a passer?
Well, I mean, it was to force him to be a passer, number one. It was kind of try to make his offense as one-dimensional as possible, because if he has the element of the run game, which he always does because he's a runner, and the thing about having a quarterback that's a runner – is it gives you an extra blocker as an offense. So as a defense, you always kind of have a bonus guy. If you got Hoyer handing the ball off in the run game, we got a bonus guy. We always got an extra guy. But once you know, Lamar Jackson or you know, somebody else becomes a part of the run game, Cam Newton becomes a part of the run game, we have to account for him. And they have another blocker to account for us. So that kind of tilts the odds. So that's the toughest thing, is trying to get him in a position where he's one-dimensional. But like I said, he's progressed and gotten better as a passer, and I think he'll only get better.
I'm going to bring in producer extraordinaire Ellen Fleming here. So she's really been feeling – you know, Cam's sartorial game. And I think that's what she missed the most from last night, was not getting to see Cam, you know, sort of do his thing. And you mentioned the iconic saga. He kind of lets you know how he's going to formulate his ensemble for the game. But Ellen, I know you were really disappointed without Cam. So what did you do last night, Ellen, without like Cam's outfit game?
I cried. I sat down. No, I said this before. I want a show on and off the field. And the show we got yesterday was a police escort, which is just not a show. And without him bringing that, I think that's what we needed as a team. We lost Tom Brady. People are still talking about the breakup. And I need someone in a canary yellow suit. And we didn't have
that look.
He did.
He killed it. If someone else wore that suit, they would look like one half of Dumber and Dumber. Looking like he was going to win a game, and that's what he did. Who do you think has the best fashion sense in the league? Or is there a moment that you can think back to that said, that guy's going to win the game?
Oh, man. You know, I played with Cam his rookie year, actually. I've known him for a while. He would definitely be at the top of my list. And actually, after I left Carolina, that's when he kind of took his fashion sense, you know, up another notch. And, you know, these guys got a ton of money. They got stylists. They can, you know, pretty much do whatever they want when it comes to clothes. So he would definitely be – it's nobody that I can – and it's been some looks where I kind of – I don't know about that with Cam. You know, kind of the same thing when you see Russell Westbrook, you see some of those outfits where you're like, I don't know. But, you know, I would say, especially this year, since he's been in New England, I would say they've been pretty much all hits that I've seen so far. So maybe he's just kind of maturing in that fashion game. But he's definitely at the top of that list. And he's one of those guys, like I said, that swag, you know, it permeates throughout the team. So you'll see a guy like that you know, pregame or something, you know, if you're on, that's a guy you typically want on your team, on your side. Because you got other guys, too, who have a different, kind of like Aaron Rodgers. Like, he kind of has that kind of, you know, kind of air.
Just as like the gap, cocky man.
Yeah, but see, I'm talking on the field only. But he has a swag to him. Brady has a swag to him. More so of like, you know, an assassin. He can be up 40 points on you, score a touchdown, and celebrate like he just won a Super Bowl. So it's different. It's different levels.
So you played with Cam. I forgot about that. I'm glad you brought that up, your stint in Carolina. So I feel like you played with the quarterback who cared the most about fashion, Cam, and the one who cared the least, Andrew Luck.
Absolutely. That is an accurate statement. Andrew Luck, I mean, if he didn't have to wear suits, he wouldn't have.
What was – when you played with Brady, because we're going to keep it on the fashion tip here. So he was with Giselle at that point. What was Brady like, you know, from the fashion standpoint? And just from – one of the things I always hear is that even though he was, like, going to, like, the Met Gala and, like, all this other stuff, that he was still, like, a pretty relatable teammate.
Brady was very, very relatable. And that was a part of that culture. And Cam's the same way. But Brady, you know, you would, and coming into the league, I came in the league in 2009, and Brady was already, you know, considered one of the GOATs, if not the GOAT. So, as a rookie coming into it, it's kind of like, wow, kind of got that, you know, I'm in a locker room with Tom Brady and Randy Moss and, you know, Vince Wilfork and guys that I've looked up, Bill Belichick, you know, guys I've looked up to. And then you get in the locker room with him, and all those guys were so personal. Teddy Bruschi was there, Junior Seau got arrested. So, like, all these guys that you looked at, you know, like heroes, and then they're, you know, just shooting the stuff with you. So, I'll never forget my rookie year, fourth preseason game we were playing. the New York Giants, and I'm stretching, you know, I'm about to play a couple series, and I don't really know, you know, it's fourth preseason game. The vets, they could care less about fourth preseason game. So I'm out there getting ready for a game, and Brady, you know, comes up to me in the middle of my stretch, and just, we have like a 5-10 minute conversation just pregame. And I was just like, wow, I gotta text my, hey man, yeah, Brady was talking to me before the game and stuff. And then it was just crazy. First offseason, I saw him down at Prime 112 in Miami, and you know, just that man I had a conversation about. So it was just like, he was always kind of one of the guys, you know, as much as he could be. Obviously, he wasn't going to, you know, go to five guys with you, but, you know, he was one of the guys, and he was swaggy too. Brady was swaggy too. You just knew you couldn't afford anything he put on.
And now, just pretend like it's just me, you, and Ellen, man. Like, nobody else is like, I got to ask you the question that everybody here always debates. Who was more important to the Patriots' success, Brady or Belichick?
That's an easy, easy, very easy answer. Bill Belichick. The reason why is Bill Belichick. You've seen a lot of great quarterbacks come through the league, and Tom, and he's at the top of the list in my opinion. But at the same time, Belichick has been a head coach in a GM, been a head coach, and you know, having that culture, because the culture is a huge part of it. People throw it around a lot, but having guys, it's a different dynamic in professional sports, because your best players are getting paid way more than the coaches. And they're still the guy in charge. So a Tim Duncan would have to buy into a Popovich for that to work. Brady had to buy in and be one of the guys. He had to be able to get chewed out in the meeting. Just like, that doesn't happen around the NFL. So for them to even have that dynamic, that's because of Belichick and him drafting and knowing when to cut guys and trade them and doing, like, those are two completely different jobs. So a lot of great organizations, especially in football, organizations win championships. So Belichick was a bigger part of that. And obviously he didn't throw any passes. So Brady definitely played his key role. But I would say, if I had to put a number on, I would say 58-42 Belichick.
Really? Okay. Wow. As a former player, you surprised me a little bit there. All right. Good answer, though. I mean,
that's the real answer, man. Because it's tough to put teams together and to, you know, have, and for this long. I mean, it's been 20 plus years now for Belichick.
True.
That same standard. So that's tough to do in any sport.
Hey, you know the game better than I do. I'm just going to say this, though. If it's really like, and I know you said 58-42, you didn't say it was all about Bill, and you're right, it is degrees, but I didn't see Bill make Brian Hoyer or Jarrett Stidham look like Tom Brady on Monday night. That's all I'm going to say on that.
They still had an opportunity to win
that
game.
You're right. No, they did.
If you put that team, you put that situation on a bunch of other coaches traveling the same day, new quarterback, that game wouldn't have been close. And, it's a team effort for sure.
That's a great point. Now, on Everything DB on YouTube, which people definitely need to check out, you had a cool breakdown of Kyle Duggar, the rookie second-round pick, you know, like yourself, who is now with the Patriots safety. And one of the things that caught my eye that you were talking about, you said, you know, there's no place like New England. What makes New England so different from other places in the NFL?
It's just kind of what I was just talking about without Bill. And it's just a – it's just a different level of accountability. And, it's a thousand ways to skin a cat, but, that way obviously works for him in that building. And, just bringing a young guy into that locker room, you got Devin McCourty there. You have Stephon Gilmore. You have guys who have played so many downs in this league that when you just come in and get into the fold, they're going to make sure you're in the right place. Because it's one thing to be a young player in the league and have veterans around you that'll help you kind of guide. It's almost having mentors, life coaches. And then getting thrown into your second-round pick, first-round pick, and now you're the guy. And now you have to be out there getting guys lined up, and you have to be able to figure out formation. Like, things are moving so fast when you're first coming into the league. So the more guys that you have around you that can kind of just help you along the way, the better. And those guys, and it's a high standard of playing as well.
You mentioned Devin. Devin came in after you. Did you ever rookie prank Devin?
No pranks. But he did buy me a nice bottle of Louis 13s, man.
So ooh, Jeff, man. Okay.
Yeah, that was his rookie gift to me at the rookie dinner. Man, I wonder if they're still doing rookie dinners this year with COVID, man. They got to figure that out. I don't mind, so everybody's got to do it.
What did you have to do at your rookie dinner, and who ran that with the Patriots?
The Patriots, we did it as a team. And we did it smart, too. We did it at Capital Grill, I think. And we set it up ahead of time. We had a pre-pick menu. And, hey, you know, this is what we're paying. This is what we're going out the door. This is how we're splitting it up. So we went there with a game plan. We went there with a good game plan.
That's smart. That's smart.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some guys that came in there. It's the liquor that kills you, man. Guys come in there ordering those fancy wines. And
like the Jerry Jones drink, whatever. What's that? Johnny Walker Blue or whatever?
Man, you know? Look, I don't even want to know. That's where they kill you with the liquor. We did good with the food, but they still got us on the liquor. But
yeah, see, I can see that.
Guys, I mean, we had a big club. We had like 11 to 12 guys. Like
yeah.
You said, Julian was, he was in the seventh, I think. We had a lot of guys. Brandon Tate, a lot of guys that year.
Can you kind of like say to them, like, hey, man, you know, I was a second round pick, not a first round pick, so I didn't really get that money, so go easy on me, or no?
Oh, nah. They know what it is. So actually, that's funny you asked that. So as rookies, that's one of the things you do, training camp. You're going up there, you got to sing your fight song, name, school, signing bonus, like all that off the rip. So everybody knows what you signed for. Everybody knows what they're going to get out of you. So, but it's part of it, man. You got to earn your stripes.
I'll tell a quick story. There was one year, and I think it was rookie year of 06, my first year covering. So Chad Jackson and Lawrence Maroney were like the high, you know, rookies. And uh-huh. They got their first paychecks, their first pay stubs, and they were opening them and they were comparing them and they were jumping up and down in the locker room celebrating at how much money that they were making. And you played with Tom, so you know. So Tom just kind of gave him the side eye, like kind of like, you know, basically, we got to prep for this week. Like, you guys should be in your playbook, you know, not jumping up and down. But I don't know. If I saw those paychecks, I'd be jumping up and down too.
Yeah. You got to jump up and down. You know, it's nothing like seeing those checks. It's nothing like seeing those checks on Monday morning. That makes a loss. You feel a little bit better about a loss, a lot better about a win. So nothing like that check on Monday morning.
I got to ask you this. So, you know, your stint with the Patriots, probably a little bit shorter than Bill had planned and you had planned. So what was it like in 2011 when Bill said to you, hey, you know, Darius, we have to move on? What's it like having Bill Belichick, you know, tell you that you're no longer on his team?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously that's a tough moment. And for me, my second year, I struggled with my second year. I had a good first year. Struggled in my second year, you know, got benched, I think, after the second or third game, was playing kind of sparingly. And then, you know, in training camp, I kind of saw kind of where it was going. And I actually went into Bill, was kind of asking, like, you know, what's going on? You know, and I was, like you said, a second-round pick going into my third year. So I still felt really highly about myself. You know, with some things scheme-wise that I thought, you know, we kind of bumped heads on, you know, Belichick. There is no, you know, your way or my way. It's his way or the highway. So I got that doghouse. And but it was a good conversation. And then I went out there and I ended up getting cut. And I don't know if he did this kind of to spite me a little bit, but I ended up getting cut like Wednesday of week one. So typically those cuts are made in the training camp. And then guys are cut. And then, you know, guys get picked up on other squads. So we got all the way into game week, and I got cut. I think we were playing the Dolphins, matter of fact. So I got cut that week, ended up getting picked up waivers by Carolina. But it was a good conversation. You know, he kept it real, honest. And every time that I've seen him and spoke to him since, you know, we've had good conversations, whether it's been off after a game or just seeing him in passing. But so it's always respectful. He's going to tell you exactly the reason why, you know, and how you can get better going forward. And then, you know, just kind of that was that, you know, it's just, hey, well, I'll see you at some point. That's what I told him. I'll see you at some point down the line. And we saw him a couple of times. And, you know, it was good. It was a good conversation, a real conversation. And as a player, that's what you can appreciate. And guys that are making the decision, calling the shots, they're just real with you and have, you know, authentic conversations with you. And that's what I always got with Bill. He's you know, he gets a bad rap in the media, but he's a great guy. If I bump into him, definitely would talk to him. He'd talk to me, like we have a conversation. But Bill's a solid dude, you know, on and off the field. He's solid, and you know, he's about his business. And when it comes to that football, when it comes to that team, when he trades somebody, when he cuts somebody, whatever it is, go for it on fourth and two. He's going to come in that locker room. He's going to come in that meet room. He's going to stand in front of the team and be like, hey, I made the decision. I will make a decision every day that I feel is best for this team. And that's how he explains whatever move he makes. So you got to respect it.
So you break down a lot of football stuff. Do you want to be a coach? Do you want to go into coaching? And, you know, obviously it's a big issue in the league. You know, we need more diversity in coaching staffs. And obviously you definitely have the knowledge. Is that something you want to do, or is that lifestyle, you know, not for you?
Yeah, you know what? When I first, because my last year, my ninth year, I kind of felt like, you know, it could potentially be my last year. Not only what was going on the field, but kind of off the field with the, you know, protests and things of that nature. I was kind of in the front of that. Well, not in the front, but, you know, and caught in that. So, but after, you know, I just felt like So as a, it's a certain group of players, and you've covered this sport long enough that you can probably even know, okay, that, like, you know, Devin McCourty could be a coach. You know, it's just certain guys.
Gerard,
you know,
Mayo, who is a coach, yeah. Around me.
Gerard Mayo, like you saw, I played with Gerard. Like, I knew he would be a coach. So it's a certain group of guys who you know can do that. And I felt like I kind of fit in that basket. So once I was done playing, you know, I would talk to some, you know, general managers or whoever, and it was just like, oh, you know, do this internship or this, that, and third. And I didn't mind kind of earning my way, but at the same time, you know, if I go and graduate college with a degree and I go to the military, like, I'm not going to start at the same private as somebody who doesn't have a college degree. It doesn't matter what that degree is in. So if I translate at the football, I played 9 years on the highest level, and now you're telling me I got to do the same thing as this, you know, GA coming from, you know, Maine. Like, you know, no disrespect to the Maine.
No, I know what you're saying, though. North Dakota School of Mines and Technology.
Exactly. So then you see, you know, guys like Kellen Moore. You know, he retires and he becomes a quarterback coach the next year. So that kind of bothered me, just how that worked. And then obviously, the more I thought about it, the more I thought about those sacrifices and the sacrifice you would have to make as a coach, as a scout, as a whatever, you know, in that building. You know, having kids now who are growing up, you know, school age, and I've already missed a bunch of things. So now I'm like, oh, no, I can't put that energy and that effort into that anymore. But what I am doing, I'm consulting guys. I'm consulting guys, you know, on a one-on-one basis, which is needed, not only on the field, but off the field, just managing and navigating life. So I'm consulting guys, and man, I'm not gonna lie, after watching this Cowboys film, I've been watching this Cowboys film for the last, I know we're talking Patriots, but I was watching their film literally last probably 3 hours, and I'm like, I might send them an email or try to friend Jerry Jones on LinkedIn or something and just say, hey, I got a consultant, pass game coordinator, something. I can do something for you right from home. So let's figure something out. So who knows what it'll evolve into, but I'm a consultant right now.
Okay, that's good.
No coaching, consultant. Yep.
And that's, don't forget, podcaster.
Oh, podcaster
and the podcaster extraordinaire. So that's what I'm doing now. I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. And best part about it is I can do it from home. So as soon as we get off, I'll be right back in school in 2 minutes.
Last question, most important question for you, Darius J. Butler, who is obviously putting his UConn degree to good use here, consulting. You need to help out Mike Nolan in Dallas. But most important question, are your Miami Heat going to win the NBA championship?
Yes, we're going to win. You saw a glimpse of it last game with Jimmy Butler taking over. I think he's my cousin. I'm not sure yet. He hasn't responded back to my friend request. But so Jimmy Butler, man, he's taking that team under his wing, man, putting them on his back. Got a lot of young guys. Obviously, you know, Lakers got two great players, Anthony Davis and LeBron. And if they play their best basketball, I don't think anybody can beat them. But if we take AD out of the game like we did last game, and Jimmy plays how he plays, and if we get Bam back, Bam or Dragic, man, we got a chance. I'm going Heat in six.
Heat in six. Well,
yeah, I'm crazy like that.
The Boston fans definitely have seen enough of your Heat, so they know how good that they are eliminating the Celtics. So that's the Darius J. Butler, Heat super fan. He even dropped the we, like a real fan, the we. Which is cool. So Miami Heat super fan, NFL veteran, excellent NFL analyst. You got to check him out on the Man-to-Man pod with Antoine Bethea. You got to check him out on everything, DB. Darius, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here to enlighten us and provide some laughs and some great stories about your life in the NFL and your life now.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me, man. Good catching up.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate you listening. You can find the podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate if you go on there, subscribe, and rate so other people can find the Take 5 podcast. We'll see you next time.